People First Radio is a program about people, the society in which we live, and issues related to health and wellness.
Welcome to People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. Before he was a four-time Grey Cup champion, the first player to be the game's MVP and most valuable Canadian at the same time, Andrew Harris was playing in Nanaimo with the Vancouver Island Raiders. Now retired, Harris has shared some of the challenges he faced growing up and during his career. In a documentary that came out last year called Running Back Relentless, he opened up about difficult family relationships, troubles in school, a period of suicidal ideation, and other obstacles he had to overcome. Now president of the Vancouver Island Raiders, Harris was back in Nanaimo this month for a fireside chat about mental health, where he was joined by other leaders in the organization. Put together by the Chamber of Commerce and the Canadian Home Builders Association of Vancouver Island, the event was held at the Nanaimo Golf Club and moderated by Carrie Ann Cody. We're going to be bringing you that discussion on today's program. Joining Harris on the panel was Raiders head coach and longtime Nanaimoite, Sean Arabsky, who opened up about the role the football community played in supporting him when his father passed away while Arabsky was in high school. Also on the panel was Warren McCarty, who runs a football consulting business and trains quarterbacks across North America. McCarty works as a consultant with the Raiders, and his son Blaze plays for the team. We take you now to the event, from the field to the boardroom.
This is a stepping away from our usual formalities to have a meaningful and open conversation. I know for our speakers, this wasn't just a matter of showing up. This involved them taking away time from their families, the sports teams that they coach, and their businesses as well. So we really appreciate you guys making the trip. So I'll give each of you an opportunity to introduce yourselves. So if you want to go ahead, Andrew.
All right, Andrew Harris. I played for the Raiders from 2005 to 2009. I came out here from Winnipeg, Manitoba, a single mother, not really having the best guidance, best vision, best role models, and really didn't really trust anyone at all. As soon as I came out, I remember coming over on the ferry and just looking. I didn't leave the deck the whole time. I was just in awe of the ocean and the mountains and the air. As soon as I got here, I met, you know, the amazing people that, you know, were starting this organization. Some of you guys know Hadi Abassi, Matthew Blocker. You know, that really cemented me in being, you know, part of, you know, what the Raiders were doing. So came out here for 5 years, got an opportunity to make the BC Lions practice roster while I was playing. Played for the BC Lions for 5 years, or 6 years, sorry. Went and won a Grey Cup in 2011. 2011, yeah. That was my first year starting. And then kind of took the torch and ran with it. And, you know, played for 14 years, 5 years in Winnipeg. Won two more Grey Cups. And then Winnipeg didn't want me because I was old and dusty. And then I beat him in the Grey Cup the next year. So F him, right? So, but yeah, now I'm back with the Raiders in the presidential role, and super honored to be in this position, honestly. Like, this team gave me so much, the memories, the bonds, the brotherhood, the trust and confidence that I gained in the 5 years playing here, and the people that I went along that journey with, something I'll never forget. So being a part of this team and you know, a leader in this team, and having guys like Sean and Warren, Terrell is here as well, one of our board members, Carrie Ann, we're building a really strong organization, and you know, when I played here, we won three national championships, and I think we won three or four games in a 5 year span, which is disgusting, and shouldn't be like that, but we're going to do that again. It's a great feeling, great memories, and I'm really excited about the group and the people that we have on board with us, and hoping that we can kind of mingle and collaborate with more new faces, old faces, and take this team back to the top again. So I'm excited to be here. Thanks.
I'm American. I'm from Texas. I'm Warren McCarty. My son Blaze was the VI Raiders Offensive Rookie of the Year last year. He's a receiver, so I have, my own son is up here playing. My history with Canadian football and all things Canada goes back to 1987. I was a young buck in West Texas, and it's hot as hell during the summer, and believe it or not, in the late 80s, cable television finally came to Amarillo, where I'm from. And during the summers, when it was too hot to be outside, we would keep it glued on ESPN, and they were playing tape-delayed CFL games. And I fell in love with the very first game I ever watched, July of 87, Winnipeg versus Hamilton. And I've been hooked since. Professionally, I spent, after my playing days were over, I spent 11 years the NFL, CFL, and the Arena League, coaching and scouting. Got out in 2008, and have done a lot of things, but today I own a coaching agency, so I represent coaches in the NFL and the NCAA and the Canadian League now as well. I train quarterbacks from the NFL and CFL all the way down to high school kids, including my own sons. Vernon Adams, who's now the quarterback of Calgary Stampeders, is one of my proteges, one of the guys I've worked with for many years, basically since he got out of college. And I help young men with recruiting. I just basically get to scratch all my itches. I do a lot of consulting, and that's kind of my role with the team now. And I guess later on we can get into how I met this guy, but I was a fan of his before we ever met. I know every province. I know the names of all the provinces. I've been studying up on my geography since I was a little kid. And for my son to have gotten a chance to play in the Canadian Junior Football League was an incredible opportunity, because he was the first American, one of the first Americans at least, that's ever played for the Raiders. And for him to pick a place that is, in my mind, just one of the most gorgeous places on planet Earth, because it's where the mountains meet the ocean, is pretty incredible. And his experience his first year, of course, he lived with Carrie Ann, got to know her family really well, being mentored by Sean and Andrew. You know, his commitment and his path is to play in the Canadian Football League. That's his goal. And you know, we've got time to let that unfold. He's a pretty special young man, but more importantly, he now has found his people. And his teammates, we had a whole bunch of them down in Denver for a little mini camp, but those are his guys. And some of the people he's met in the community have really already impacted him. He's just turned 20 years old. He's becoming a man, not always, like doing dishes and shit like that at the house is he could be better at. But he's growing up, and the Raiders and the people have been a huge part of that. So that is why I'm here tonight, to talk about kind of my perspective on the team and men's mental health, because Andrew and I have a connection that way as well. So
my name is Sean Arabsky, head coach of the Raiders. Very honored to be speaking here, even to be standing alongside these two men. I think very highly of them. They've been both extremely strong mentors to me over the last couple years. When I first joined the Raiders was like a few weeks or the same time Andrew did, and I remember sitting at Carlos O'Brien's, you know, talking about what even the vision for this team would be, coming off a 1-9 season where no one wanted to play here, no one really cared about the organization at all, and kind of to see the how far we've come already has been extremely, extremely rewarding. But I'm born and raised in Nanaimo, you know, first kindergarten class at Cinnabar, went to Barsby, went through the Southside program, played baseball for the Mid-Island Pirates before going to play JUCO baseball down in the States. Didn't work out the way I wanted to, so I came back home, played football for the Raiders for 2 years, was the last team to win a provincial championship before we went and played national semis. And, you know, I was able to get a full scholarship to University of Carleton, got a psych and neuroscience degree there before COVID hit. And, you know, from since then, I've been able to move back to Nanaimo, help coaching the Raiders, started working for Caged, where we do a lot of football development for kids and stuff. And it's very even full circle to, you know, even go down to a 7-on-7 tournament where Warren and Blaze are, and we've got kids like Bastion Stoles, a grade 7 at football in Nanaimo, who's, you know, he knows Warren's kid Blaze because Blaze coached him. And, you know, it's very full circle for, you know, a community like Nanaimo to have like opportunities like that, and to have people like Warren and Blaze and Andrew as well go through it to, you know, just to help these kids have opportunities outside of Vancouver Island. So I'm extremely excited to, again, like, just be next to these guys here. And, like, what we have going on right now with the Raiders is, in terms of my vision with it when I first started, was to make it as close to a university program as possible. Because I remember when I had finished with the Raiders, I was like, I'm done with junior football. Because I thought that there's a lot of lackluster stuff that can happen in junior football, but when it's ran the right way, when Warren says we want it to be ran like the 10th CFL team, and that's kind of the standard that we want it to be in the community and on the team, it can go really a long ways for, you know, what we can do for these kids.
Okay, so we're gonna start with Andrew. So these questions are on leadership and resilience. So Andrew, you've led multiple teams to championships. What qualities define great leadership under pressure, and how can business leaders apply those lessons in their own roles?
Yeah, so when I think about emotions, right? So having emotional control as a leader and preparing your team, your employees for those emotions, and you know, talking about, you know, contingency plans and you know, the outcome, setting goals, and being calm with, you know, whatever's coming towards us. I look at focus, again, back just to goal setting and having a direct idea of like who we are, what are we trying to do, what is our purpose, what is our why? Because when bullets start flying and you face adversity and things are going crazy, you can always kind of go back to those principles of why you're doing it, you know, why it's struggling with emotional control, right? Then I think of, you know, just being decisive in your direction. I've always been a leader by leading by example, and I've always been a charismatic leader. So leading by example, I'm jumping in the fire with you. If we're struggling, if we're, you know, and I'll try to face things as hard as I can for myself just to feel what that feels like, and just so I know what everyone else is feeling. But as a charismatic leader, you feel those emotions with the guys. You get to know your teammates, and you get to feel what they're feeling. So when you can get a general sense of everyone's emotions within that group, with the same mental capacity and the same goal-oriented vision, when things do get tough, you can have the confidence to look at your team, your employees, in the eye and say, I know what you guys are going through because I'm in here with you, you know? And having that mental control, emotional control, really goes a long way with you know, receiving that message and portraying it across the group.
Warren, so this question is actually to the both of you, so we'll start with Warren's response first. So Warren and Sean, you've both built successful careers in business and sports. How do you approach decision-making when the stakes are high?
Always think about connection. So I think about, you know, whether it's a one-on-one situation or how's it going to impact, I think about what is my connection to the person I'm dealing with or the group of people I'm dealing with, just in general, what is my connection? Because really, that is what every endeavor outside of your own family really gets down to. What is my connection with the people that are staring back at me? And it's typically, it's not money, it's not, yes, there are goals, there are, you know, financial goals, team success goals, things of that nature, but none of that gets achieved if there's not connection and connectivity. So I'm always thinking about, how does this impact my connection with this person or this group or our team? Does it damage it in any way? How can I make a decision that's a positive but is going to continue to keep my connection strong? That makes sense. So, you know, I know we have a lot of ladies here in the room. I try to think about not just like the bro shit, like we're just a bunch of dudes and we're doing our work. I also think about, you know, 'cause I have three daughters as well. I listen to them talk about the things that are important, and what I'm really hearing over and over and over on who they're hanging out with or what they're doing is the connection they have to that person. So Andrew and I have talked a lot about this. Sean and I have talked a lot about this. Nothing's getting done. We're not achieving goals. We're not dealing with adversity without recognizing and acknowledging what our connection is, right? So you and I are connected because you took care of my baby boy, right? And now we've grown to become friends and this professional relationship. Andrew and I have a connection. Sean and I have a connection. Probably everybody here in this room has a connection, not only with who they're with, but the people that they're working for or that work for them. And any big decision, still I factor in, how does this impact positively or negatively connection?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I feel like I'm still just in the baby legs of what I'm doing business-wise, and you know what we've been able to achieve the last couple of years has been amazing. But my biggest thing is trying to be as true to myself as possible. So, you know, when I think about even just when we were down in San Diego and, you know, talking about different people that the kids could train with and whatnot, and they were just like, we just really like your vibe, and you know, we really want to keep pursuing that. And for me, when I talk to my wife about that, it's like, I don't even feel like I'm really doing anything other than just trying to be myself as best as possible. And I think it was kind of a Pete Carroll quote as well, as like, you know, he's 7 years old and he's talking about, I just need to be, his advice for young coaches was to find who you are and to be as true to yourself as possible, and then kind of really lean into that. And it almost feels like it's pulling stuff out of nothing. But for me, I've just found a lot of success of building connections like Warren talked about there, and you know, kind of going on year three of working with the Raiders and seeing like someone like Felice Toscano, who's now an All-Canadian, and he hadn't even played football for 2-3 years, but he's started working out with me for 5 days a week. And now the relationship we have is much more peer, big brother, little brother, than it is like coach player. And for me to see him get a full ride scholarship to Manitoba, get a BC Lions tryout coming up in a couple weeks, is like the, when I first started, it was like, okay, how can we make money and how can we, you know, build this? And now it's like, okay, how can we afford these, how can we afford opportunities for kids, again, that they couldn't achieve otherwise?
This is People First Radio. We've been listening to a fireside discussion on mental health that was held in Nanaimo this month, featuring a trio of folks involved with the Vancouver Island Raiders of the Canadian Junior Football League. The chat was moderated by Carrie Ann Cody, CEO of the Canadian Home Builders Association's Vancouver Island Local. The panel featured Andrew Harris, president of the Raiders, and a four-time Grey Cup champion who played with the BC Lions, Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and Toronto Argonauts. Before joining the CFL, Harris played for the Raiders. It also featured Warren McCarty, who works as a football consultant helping train players and representing coaches across North America. Also on the panel was Raiders head coach Sean Arabsky, who grew up in Nanaimo and also played for the team when he was younger. Let's get you back to the conversation.
All right, so back to you, Andrew. Can you share a moment in your career, whether on the field or in the boardroom, where resilience was the key to success? How did you push through?
Yeah, I mean, anyone who's seen my documentary or, you know my story, know that 2019 was a really tough year for me, you know, on the field and off the field, and you know, to the point where, you know, I wanted to, you know, I was considering taking my life, and even just sharing that, you know, with people on Amazon TV or Apple TV or even in front of you is really still hard to swallow, because I can't believe myself that I was at that low of a spot. But during the season, you know, and I'm having an all-star season, and you know, we end up winning the Grey Cup that year, but you know, I missed some games and was really a really low point in my life. You know, I went and saw a sports psychologist, and again, I've always been a person who is very shut off and reserved, and I didn't want to let anyone in and show weakness and vulnerability. And I think a lot of people wear a mask all the time, you know, as leaders, as owners, as, you know, as parents, you know, even as friends. We put a front on, we put a mask on, and we don't want to let people see who we truly are. And at any given time, you know, it can be scary. You can scare yourself in tough situations. And in my extreme case, it was, you know, I was in a really, really, really tough situation. But basically, when, you know, when it came down to it, I went and saw the sports psychologist, and she just kind of got me in this mind frame of like getting back to where I really enjoyed the love of football. And I remember pulling out this picture, and I think I was 8 or 9 years old, and I got this big smile on my face, throwing the ball up in the air, just like, you know. I pulled this picture up, and I just like put myself in that position again, being that little boy with that football. And it blocked out all the noise and all the garbage, and even still, trying to deal with it and not bury it, but push through and be resilient so I could be there for my team. And, you know, that year, We ended a 29-year Grey Cup run, and I was the first player to win the most outstanding Canadian and MVP. It was a very special moment in my life. But it took a lot for me to get there, because I couldn't look my teammates in the eye. I couldn't look myself in the eye. I threw away a lot of friends, relationships, and just isolated myself into, you know, the lowest place I could be. For me, it was speaking to someone, which took a lot of courage, a professional, and having faith in someone else other than myself, because I wasn't strong enough for myself. I wasn't strong enough to be who I could be, and I needed to put that faith in someone else just to guide me to the right mind frame to help me get out of that space. So everyone has their different ways, but that was mine in that spot.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Warren, how do you balance confidence and humility in leadership, and why is that important in both sports and business?
That's a great question.
Thanks.
There are times where my wife questions my ability to be humble. Because, like what Andrew's talking about, when you're in a leadership position, we want to project confidence, and we want to project that we've always got the answers, and I'm a quarterback, and that's the position I coached, and that's also the role of the QB, and it's also kind of a mentality, right? But I think what people appreciate more than anything is seeing you be vulnerable and seeing you put yourself in a position where your wounds can be opened a little bit, because that humanizes you, makes you seem real. Because there's obviously there's no perfect leader, there's no perfect business owner, there's no perfect builder or real estate agent. We've all got our flaws, but people will rally around you, like Andrew was talking about, like just getting down and dirty with somebody when they have to, when they're at their lowest. Because of trust, well, it's hard to build trust if you don't, peel the curtain back a little bit. So there is a balance between being super confident, but also as a coach, on like the coaching side of my business, it's admitting when, my bad, I called the wrong play. I didn't see this, right? Like, didn't always have the answers. The consulting side of my business, especially when I'm talking to, my coaching clients, it's, being able to reflect back on, some of my experiences and failures in particular. It's really easy to talk about all your good stuff and, winning and, financial successes and things of that nature. But talking about failure often leads to so much perspective for people. So that balance of humility and being humble versus, the confidence that we want to project, there is a fine line. And sometimes it's really easy to get, way over here on the confidence side and not being humble and showing humility and vulnerability is probably the additional word there. But, my wife's really good about humbling me and reminding me, like, hold on, dude, let's talk about this. But that's, the yin and the yang, the good balance that you have when you have good relationships with people, right? Try to think about that a lot in my different business endeavors, is being vulnerable and not just always having the answers, because sometimes the answers lie within experience.
Perfect. Yeah. That's a great answer. Thank you. Sean, many leaders talk about the importance of grit. How do you develop it, and how do you instill it in a team?
Yeah, I think it kind of even goes back in terms of the confidence, humility that they were talking about, to be able to get players to play for you or employees to play for you. I feel like they need to be able to see your strength and humility at the same time. So when Warren and I were talking last night, and we were talking about how to get players to play for you, even if you lack like certain personal relationships or personal skills, or if like even for me, like there's 70 guys on our football team, it's very hard to connect with all 70 of them. I can do a very good job connecting with 50 of them. 10 of them I need to work hard for. 10 of them, sometimes I tell myself like it's a lost cause and I battle myself and ask for other people for help. But in terms of trying to get people to play for you, it's like Warren basically told me to, it's like try to create so much confidence in them and create such a strong relationship with them that they don't want to be let, they don't want to let you down. So for me, if someone doesn't want to let you down, they will dig deeper and deeper and work harder so then you guys can achieve your goals. So I think that's a big part of it. And like they talked about too, being vulnerable, like even something we started with the Raiders was some of our culture meetings where, you know, we would try to ask real questions about, you know, in our book club about what's something that happened to you that, you know, on the football field kind of comes up as like, I don't want to say trauma, but like maybe some anxiety or depression or something that happens throughout the season that is something that stems from out of the field, off the field. And I find as someone, you know, especially when they're 17, 18, 19, 20, and they have a hard time opening up, you know, as a leader, you need to be the one that opens up first. So it's like being the one to kind of share your story, share experiences you had to get them to open up. And I think that kind of comes from like a big brother, little brother relationship that if they don't want to let you down, they will work harder. And it just kind of, you gotta have to work backwards on how to even build a relationship in the first place with the connection and kind of go from there.
Back to Andrew. What are the core ingredients of a winning culture, whether in a locker room or a business environment?
I don't know. I feel like this is the number one and be all end all, honestly, is what is your why? What's your purpose? Right, identifying your why and your purpose, you know, individually first and then as a group. You know, that helps kind of everyone get on page and fall in line of, you know, we're doing this for this reason. You know, then you don't have people falling and asking, okay, why are we, oh, this is why we're doing this, you know? How come we're going over here? Oh, look, because we're doing this because of this, right? So every action has a reaction, and or every reaction has an action towards it, and we're all working towards our why and our purpose. And then the next part of that kind of just buys into, you know, the actual buy-in of you know, having people on board, you know, jumping in the boat with you. You know, I think, you know, that'll build the trust and confidence and respect. I think you need to have trust and respect, but it all comes from, you know, everyone being bought into your why. And I think, you know, when you try to measure winning culture, it's not being successful right away or winning every day. It's just continued success, you know, and gradual growth. And I think a lot of people get lost into, oh, are we winning today? Or, you know, you're going to have bad days, you're going to have off days, you're going to have bad practice, you're going to have, you know, days where you lose money, days where you lose a job. But if you're looking at your why, if everyone's bought in, if you have trust and respect within an organization, and there's continual growth throughout that process, that's what creates winning cultures. And I mean, just seeing that in business and definitely in sports, for me, it's you know, those are the three intangibles from, you know, the buy-in, the why, and the trust and respect, and, you know, again, gauging that continued growth is absolute number one for me.
Warren, how do you handle those tough conversations, whether with teammates, employees, business partners, when expectations aren't being met?
Ooh. Well, I would say I've had to work really hard at growing into those because, you know, as a quarterback on the field, it's really easy to chew ass when I just got rocked three plays in a row. You know, you're on the left tackle or your left guard because they missed a block, or receiver bros dropping the ball, or the running back fumbled, or, you know, going back and forth with a coach over a play call. It's a little bit different when, you know, you take the pads and helmet off and you're having a different conversation, or in the professional world in your businesses as a builder, you know, talking to, you know, one of your subcontractors or whomever, whatever that situation is. I get back to the connection. Okay, like, we got to have a tough conversation, but have I connected with this person on whatever? Maybe it has nothing to do with the business or football, but do we have a connection so that then we can have a real conversation? Because I think just the, and I know we have a lot of business owners in here, but just the whole I'm the owner or I'm the boss and you're, you know, the employee and you're not handling business the way I want it, or you're not doing this certain thing, or there's some expectation that hasn't been met, it's real easy to just have the confrontation and the, you know, and then what is the aftermath of that? Is this person going to quit? Are they going to go find another job? Are they going to go in the tank? Are they going to, whatever. I think getting back to what is the connection that you have with the person, being able to revisit that, break down walls, and then have the conversation like, look, here's what I like about you. Here's what I'm not liking about you. Let's get to the reason why you're not performing. But I think it's reminding that person what it is you like about them, why y'all are connected, other than just, you work for me and I write you a check every 2 weeks. That don't work. But when you can get through, like, okay, these walls are broken down. This is what I like about you. This is what I'm not liking about you. Let's talk about this. Why? What's going on? Because the thing is, just like Andrew's alluding to, there were probably dudes in his locker room in 2019 who had no idea what was going on behind the scenes. You know, when it's the owner-employee relationship, you don't know what's going on when they leave. Maybe you do. Health, mental health, family problems, money problems, whatever. It's irrational to think that things in our personal lives don't impact performance. So cutting through all the nonsense, getting the walls broken down, reminding the person of your connection, and then getting to the truth makes those conversations way easier. And when I was a general manager, I was really good about just being the boss and the asshole, and this is, we're going to do this my way, and here's the goal, and if you're not meeting that, well, then you're gone. But when you start rolling through people, you start to figure out pretty quick, like, okay, maybe the approach isn't working, right? Maybe I can't just quarterback my way through this whole thing and just chew ass and everybody's going to be, you know, yes, sir. And that's not always how you get to the desired result. And whether it's, we're talking about being, you know, a home builder, a real estate agent, or any other business owner, or in business with somebody, the ultimate end goal isn't going to be achieved unless there's some sort of harmony and respect factor and trust and connectivity. So getting those walls broken down and reminding whoever it is you're dealing with of their why, your why, the connection that you hold, that'll allow you to get to the truth. Once you can get to the truth, then problems get solved, or you realize, okay, this person's got to go.
This is People First Radio. Before he was a four-time Grey Cup champion, a Grey Cup MVP, or CFL's most outstanding Canadian, Andrew Harris was in Nanaimo, playing for the Vancouver Island Raiders of the Canadian Junior Football League. Now retired from playing, Harris is president of the Raiders. He's opened up about the challenges he faced growing up and during his playing career, sharing his story off the field in a documentary called Running Back Relentless. He's credited close friends and a sports psychologist as among the people who have helped him through difficult times. Harris was back in Nanaimo this month for a fireside chat about mental health and resilience. The event was held at the Nanaimo Golf Club and hosted by the Canadian Home Builders Association's Vancouver Island branch and the Nanaimo Chamber of Commerce. Here's Harris speaking with me prior to the fireside chat. You finish high school back in the day in Winnipeg. You come out here to Nanaimo, join up with the Vancouver Island Raiders. What did that mean for you at that time?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be completely honest. You know, coming out here was a bit of a plan B for me. I mean, I wanted to go to school, but school for me wasn't an option just based off of my grades and the situation I was in. And I came out here just for a second chance and an opportunity just to keep playing football. As soon as I came over the ferry, got to meet the people here, you know, got to see the guys in the locker room, the coaching staff. I really fell in love with the island, the demeanor, the professionalism, you know, and the brotherhood that we had here. Now fast forwarding into, you know, playing here for, you know, 5 years, you know, playing 14 years in the CFL, the success we had in the field was amazing. You know, and then the team, you know, last few years was kind of in a rut, and got involved about 2 years ago, operational side 2 years ago, and then became president last year, and really skyrocketed in this team success. And you know, again, for me, my messaging and my reason, my why, which I talk about a lot, is, you know, what's your purpose, what's your why? This team gave myself and so many others so many opportunities, so many networks, so many memories, so many things that you can hold on to for lifelong, forever, and so many positives and how to deal with adversity, and more importantly, just the brotherhood. I want to be able to recreate that and give these guys that same feeling, that same experience that I had, and better it.
Joining Harris on the panel was Raiders head coach Sean Arabski, as well as Warren McCarty, who works as a football consultant and quarterback coach. The event was moderated by Carrie-Anne Cody, CEO of the Canadian Home Builders Association's Vancouver Island Local. We're going to get you back to that discussion right now.
Sean, what role does mentorship play in building strong teams? And have you had mentors who shaped your leadership style?
I mean, I talk to these guys weekly probably, so it's basically just to have people to kind of bounce ideas off of. You know, even when you're asking people ideas, it's not even that you want the answer, it's just about how it's going to shape your own answer and kind of just getting their thoughts and ideas. But I mean, I've found mentors all the way through high school, you know, JUCO, and I do feel like that's the biggest part of my job as being a coach is trying to fill in some gaps for players in terms of having someone to talk to. I mean, even myself, like I said, born and raised in Nanaimo, I lost my dad when I was 14. So when I played football for Barsby, it's like when we had the funeral for my dad, you know, Rob Stevenson's there, you know, Larry Cooper's there, you know, father figures that kind of, not father figures that step in, but even then all your friends that played on the team are there. And, you know, I think that's the strongest part of being a coach, or even, you know, when you are a business owner or any type of leader, I don't think you really understand the impact you have on people around you. And, you know, when they go home, you know, obviously they think about themselves more than they think about anyone else, but what you say and do kind of around them really does affect them and kind of their families and everything. So, you know, really, I think for me, mentorship's in everything, especially at this point in my life, being, you know, 28 years old, that I want to try to just soak as much information as possible from the people that have been there and done that around me. Even like, you know, like Warren with kind of his businesses and stuff, a lot of the ways that I'm trying to resemble what I'm trying to do, I just feel like he's me, but older and wiser. So, so you know, yeah.
A little bit more hair too.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. But I think it's a humility thing too, to open yourself up to a mentor, is to, you know, even to tell yourself that you don't know everything. So, I think in any type of business conferences, you know, any type of extended learning books, podcasts from people that are in your field that are doing it, I think can open your mind to bigger and better things.
That's a great answer. So the next set of questions are on mental health and well-being. So the first one's to Andrew. Mental health is a critical but often overlooked aspect of leadership. What strategies have you used to maintain mental resilience in high-pressure situations?
I think the big thing is being, you know, kind of what Sean says, is true to yourself, but also knowing yourself, knowing your strengths and knowing your weaknesses, and, you know, realizing when you're weak, being vulnerable with yourself, with people around you when you're weak, and that's a hard thing to do. You know, as a male football player, there's bravado and there's a stigma about, you know, we need to bury things and you know, just go out there and shake it off and just play through it, and that's all good, honestly. I've done it for years and years and years, and you know. But when things creep up, and they start adding and taxing on you, and you can't function properly or live your life properly or have relationships, now what? So for me, I think, you know, talking to anyone about this now,
I feel I'm an advocate of mental health, and even as someone who wasn't before, I was totally like, it's a way for people to get a week off of work. You know, honestly, I really thought it was bogus and it was complete BS. And but I was just saying it, you know, like, you know, everyone gets fire insurance, you know, until, you know, their house gets on fire and it's like, oh yeah, now what? And it's like, for me, it's like mental health is a similar thing where you need to have it in the back of your mind and you need to practice tools and things to challenge it and progress. And a lot of it just comes down to communication and vulnerability with people you can trust and you care about and that care about you. I think that openness is massive. Letting people in, relating to people, you know, I could go across the room here and relate to someone in some sort of way, right? That connectivity that Warren talks about, which leads to then, you know, a conversation that, you know, maybe is uncomfortable for one of us, but maybe might make a big deal, might be a big deal for someone else, you know. And I think just being open to being not okay, being open to having conversations with someone that's not okay, and actually just, you know, taking the time to just jump in with them and be there for them. I think we get so busy in our lives and on our phones and with our families, and we miss cues, we miss signals around us every day. And I mean, I can tell if a friend calls me and there's something going on, because I've kind of been in that situation now. And I think we just need to take a little time to open those doors and open our minds up to that, and be there for one another. Whether that's friendship level, business level, sport level, or even someone you just, you know, you're passing by and that you don't see very often. But, you know, I just think that openness and that vulnerability and just taking that in will go a long way.
Something that you touched on there that resonated with me specifically is even just talking about it, you don't know how much of an impact you have. So my son's a big football kid, hence why we're doing the Raiders thing is how it started. He's probably seen your documentary at least 100 times. He played ball with Blaze on the front lawn. Every day Blaze would come outside, and Sean's coached him several times through Caged. But unfortunately, he's not able to play football anymore. He got a really bad concussion, and so at 11 years old, he's retired. And so he's really struggled with this. He struggled with this was all he wanted to do. This is his whole thing. So even at just 11, it's hurting him, but he's, like I said, watch the documentary and seeing how you've come back and you've like taken something that you love so much and applied it in another way. Mm-hmm. And so coaching, maybe reffing, like there could be other passions and paths for him to still do this. But that's just a little 11-year-old kid. And so I know that you've helped people on a larger scale. But as a mom, that's a huge scale for me. So yeah, you have no idea how big your impact is what I'm trying to articulate.
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay, next question over to Sean. There's often stigma around men discussing mental health, especially in competitive environments. How do you break that down and create more open conversations?
I think kind of like what I said earlier is, you know, for me to be the coach and to be the one leading the Zoom meetings when we have it is to then open up myself to create a safe space, really. And I do think like it's kind of going off of what Andrew said there, it's I feel like 17 to 21, 22, I think 22 is really the age where you can really start seeing young men's brains start to really develop and start making better decisions. But I even just thinking 17, 18 year olds being alone down in the States, JUCO, first time, like, you know, I was the best player in high school, baseball, football, whatever. And then you go to a team, there's 50 players and every player is the best player from their high school. And all of a sudden, for me, it was like my whole identity, my whole life was to be a baseball player and to be, I wanted to go play college baseball. And then all of a sudden you're there and your dreams are like shattered that like, oh, like maybe I'm not meant to be here. So I think just acknowledging that some kids might be feeling that, or like even, you know, for employees and stuff, that the one thing I try to stress to the guys is like, the sport is not your identity. Like, you play the sport, but you have so many other identities throughout your life, whether it's being a son, boyfriend, husband, you know, whatever job you're working, if you're going to school. But really, I think in terms of like the question is just trying to break down the barriers of trying to see who they are as a person, how they tick, you know, what they're really receptive of when you're talking to them. If there's a life experience that you've had, that they've had, to try to like really connect that way with them to kind of open it up, as well as to not like, to me, it's just put the ball in their court. Like if they want to tell you something, they will tell you something. Just give them the space to tell you that, to tell you it. Because, you know, I feel like, I don't know Andrew's experience when he was going through that, but for me, it's like even when my dad died, it was like, you have to go to therapy. And I was like, I'm 16 years old. I don't want to go to therapy, you know? But then all of a sudden it does hit. I think as long as you keep putting the space for people, I do think at some point they will kind of recognize that that is, you know, I do want to be receptive and I do want to open up, because as soon as you start doing it, you feel good about it, you start seeing growth, and the ball kind of starts rolling from there.
Thanks so much. Warren.
I just want to add on to that. Just the isolation that people feel, right? And you know, whether it's a resource like therapy or a friend, is just when someone's going through anything like depression, anxiety, or any kind of mental health, they really feel like they're the only one in the world going through it, you know? And the way they hide behind that and they don't want to express it, and some people are better at it than others, but the ones who really don't, you'll see them slipping at work, you'll see them slipping at practice, and we're so quick to just judge and think, oh yeah, they're, you know, it's something else. But again, that isolation that person feels, and it just giving that safe space to, you know, giving that space to talk about it or have the right resource or the right tool to express it, it goes a long way. But I think the biggest thing is that isolation that most people feel in that space, and you know, just finding shedding some light on it or opening a door for them really makes a big difference.
You're tuned in to People First Radio. From the field to the boardroom, leaders with the Vancouver Island Raiders football team gathered in Nanaimo this month to open up about mental health. So far on the program, we've been hearing from the three speakers at the event, Andrew Harris, Warren McCarty, and Shauna Rapsky, along with moderator Carrie Ann Cody. Harris is president of the Raiders and retired CFL star. McCarty runs a football consultancy business and trains quarterbacks across North America. Rapsky is head coach of the Raiders. The event was put on by the Nanaimo Chamber of Commerce and the Canadian Home Builders Association of Vancouver Island and held at the Nanaimo Golf Club. Let's take you back there.
Warren, for business owners and leaders who are constantly on, what are some practical ways to manage stress and avoid burnout?
This is coming from somebody who was absolutely a workaholic early, because I knew what I wanted to achieve in my career. That is pretty damn tough. I still struggle with it. But getting back to Andrew talking about what's your why, you also have to give yourself the space, especially as an owner, man or woman, to be able to put your phone down. I think, and I'm as guilty as anybody, cell phones are like the bane of all of our existence. They really are. And I love my cell phone because I love getting on YouTube and watching 80s pro wrestling to get my mind off of stuff and, you know, just, you know, movie clips and just, you know, the algorithm figures out what you like real quick on YouTube. But I have here recently rediscovered my love of fiction assassin stories. So I'm all about David Baldacci and Blitz and I. So Blitz is my son who's a junior in high school, grade 11. Is that what you guys call it here? Okay, grade 11. He's a quarterback. He's got Division I offers. He's a pretty special kid. But we have our own book club now. So I'll read a book, give it to him, and then we'll just go take an hour for a drive, get ice cream, break down the book. Right? But finding stuff that you are into that has nothing to do with building a home, selling a house. That's kind of like this group of folks, what we do, like finding non-football things that I'm into or that I can let my mind vacate. Also that doesn't have anything to do with the kids. So my wife and I have six kids, three adult daughters, and then Blaze, Blitz, and Buzz. But finding things that are about you and giving yourself the space, even if it's just a short period of time, is huge. And I just always find myself, I don't know if, and he's the expert here on this stuff, but I think maybe getting my brain off of football and thinking about Andre the Giant as a wrestler and watching an old stupid video or reading a book, it like unlocks something in my brain. And then suddenly the next day I'm like, oh yeah, this is a great idea that I need to, you know, implement. It's like it allows my brain the space to then come up with the solution that I have on this football related problem, right? So I think just, I'm sure there's a more articulate way of saying finding the things that you're into that have nothing to do with what you do on a daily basis.
I think that was a perfect way to say that. Yeah. Thank you. So Sean, how do you recognize when someone on your team is struggling, and how can leaders support mental wellness in their organizations?
I mean, I think, you know, when I spend every day with guys, you see how they tick and see how they move. One thing that I even that kind of brought that up is when I mentioned, you know, there's 80 guys on the team, there's 60 you connect with, 10 you don't, and 10 feel like lost causes. I feel like at that point, that's where, like, you need to delegate to someone else or kind of open up to maybe someone that you really trust to kind of say, hey, like, I can't get through to this guy right now, but obviously there's a ton of potential in him because that's why he's here. But like, I need your help to be able to do that. And even, you know, talking with Andrew today about, you know, running backs with the Rough Riders, that, you know, one of them's kind of been a castaway, but extremely talented, but people don't want to buy in on him anymore. But it's like, maybe he can do it. Maybe he's the one that can kind of turn it around. And that kind of makes me think too, it's like, you know, we have a GM, Tarek, now who's helping out. And there's a few guys that I've struggled connecting with, just due to personalities and et cetera, but he's been able to kind of fill a gap with that. So I think just like open communication and honesty and again, humility throughout talking with people and especially your peers or, you know, just opening up that, hey, I'm struggling to connect with him. Can you help? But I think when it comes to like noticing different people, it's really just taking the time to care, I think, about the people that are you're working with. So, you know, care about their mannerisms, care about asking them how they're doing and having an open door policy that if they are struggling, like, please have me, especially on the football field, especially, like I had a few conversations with guys last year. I was like, please lean on me. If you're struggling, if you're going to feel like you're about to blow up, like come to me before anyone else, because at least I feel personally like an extreme ownership part of it, that if you're going to blow up, I want to be the one that like at least like couldn't help you and not kind of leave that up to someone else as well. So I think just open communication with your employees, your players, and as well as your peers and coworkers to kind of like tandem, because I think as well, like, sometimes I can't see something, but Jake, who's our OC, I call him later, and he tells me something, hey, this guy was acting kind of weird, and I didn't notice it. But then it's like, again, through collaboration, you can kind of pick up on things and have extra eyes.
Andrew, what role do sports and physical activity play in maintaining mental health, and how can business leaders integrate that into their daily routines?
Yeah, I mean, sports and physical health is saved my life for sure. As far as business owners, I think, you know, just doing things that you get you guys out of your, you know, your comfort zone or what you guys do every day kind of alludes to what Warren was saying. But putting people in different environments, you know, allows them to break out of their shell and you know, open up a little more. You know, sometimes it's going for beers, you know, sometimes it's doing an escape room, whatever it is, you know, going bowling, golf, whatever it is, just outside of that environment. But I mean, from as far as the physical aspect and what sport did for me and my confidence and mental health, and it allowed me just to escape and find myself and find who I was. And, you know, talking about an identity and, you know, even in this last year, you know, I wanted to take a year away from football and do something else. And, you know, my identity has been, you know, the football player. But using the things that got me, brought me success in football, you know, parlayed and correlated in business as well. And now even being on the other side of it, you know, being working with these guys and the same intangibles that got me to, you know, to be successful on the football field helps me have success with the guys I'm working with and the team and that we're trying to build here. So, you know, comes down to dedication, comes down to, you know, actual, you know, I care about the brotherhood. I yearn for the brotherhood. I had no family growing up. I had a single mom who, you know, we didn't really have a relationship. So for me, my football family, is my family. You know, my friends are my family. So I yearn for that, you know, and I hold that year and dear to my heart, maybe almost too much where I need it. Because if I don't have that, then I'm on my own, other than my own family, my partner and my kids. And, but you know, when you put everything into, this is why I started the game. I did it because I was good and I was physical and I was an athlete, but it became so much more than that. It gave me, you know, relationships and networks and memories and tools that I wouldn't have gotten from school or anything else. Failing is the best way to learn, you know. Every day you go out there and it doesn't go your way, it's not a loss, it's a lesson, you know. I don't think you can ever really fail at something ever unless you're not learning from it, right? If you don't learn anything from a bad day, then you might be able to chalk that up as an L. But learning from your mistakes and the failed relationships, the failed opportunities, growing from those, and then finding the people that you want to do with the most. And it's sport and business are beautiful things. They're very much the same. And the way you collaborate and the way you grow and the way you set goals and put pieces together. And no one person here, successful business owner or not, has done it on their own. It takes people, it takes collaborations, it takes faith and trust and respect, and you know, it's awesome to be able to put it all together.
Andrew Harris, Warren McCarty, and Sean Arabsky speaking at a fireside chat about mental health and resilience. The event was held at the Nanaimo Golf Club and moderated by Carrie Ann Cody, CEO of the Canadian Home Builders Association's Vancouver Island Branch. That's all for the show today. You've been listening to People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. Thanks so much for tuning in.
People First Radio is a community media project of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast partners.